Two Like the Lightning, Terra Ignota, Book One, by Ada Palmer. Narrated by Jefferson Mays. Ah, my poor Jacques, you are a philosopher. But don't worry, I'll protect you. Diderot, Jacques the Fatalist and His Master. Chapter the First, A Prayer to the Reader. You will criticize me, reader, for writing in a style 600 years removed from the events I describe, but you came to me for explanation of those days of transformation which left your world the world it is, and since it was the philosophy of the 18th century, heavy with optimism and ambition, whose abrupt revival birthed the recent revolution, so it is only in the language of the Enlightenment, rich with opinion and sentiment, that those days can be described. You must forgive me my these and thous and he's and she's, my lack of modern words and modern objectivity. It will be hard at first, but whether you are my contemporary, still awed by the new order, or an historian gazing back at my 25th century as remotely as I gaze back on the 18th, you will find yourself more fluent in the language of the past than you imagined. We all are. I wondered once why authors of ancient days so often prostrate themselves before their audience, apologize, beg favors, pray to the reader as to an emperor as they explain their faults and failings. Yet, with my work barely begun, I find myself already in need of such obsequies. If I am properly to follow the style I have chosen, I must at the book's outset describe myself, my background and qualifications, and tell you by what chance or providence it is that the answers you seek are in my hands. I beg you, gentle reader, master, tyrant, grant me the privilege of silence on this count. Those of you who know the name of Mycroft Canner may now set this book aside. Those who do not, I beg you, let me make you trust me for a few dozen pages, since the tale will give you time enough to hate me in its own right. Chapter the Second, A Boy and His God. We begin on the morning of March the 23rd, in the year 2454. Carlyle Foster has risen full of strength that day, for March the 23rd was the feast of St. Turribius, a day on which men had honored their Creator in ages past and still do today. He was not yet 30, European enough in blood to be almost blonde, his hair overgrown down to his shoulders, and his body gaunt, as if he was too occupied with life to feed himself. He wore practical shoes, and a cousin's loose but comfortable wrap, gray-green, that morning. But the only clothing item given any care was his long, hooded sensei's scarf of age-grade wool, which he believed had once belonged to the great sensei's conclave reformer, Fisher G. Gurai, one of many lies in which Carlyle daily wrapped himself. Following his parishioner's instructions, Carlyle bade the car touch down, not on the high drawbridge-like walkway which led to the main door of the shimmering glass Bosch house, but by the narrow maintenance stairs beside it. These slanted their way down into the little man-made canyon which separated this row of Bosch houses from the next, like a deep, dry moat. The bottom was choked with wildflowers and seed-heavy grasses, tousled by the foraging of countless birds, and here, in the shadow of the bridge, lay Thisbe's door, too unimportant even for a bell. He knocked. "Who is it?" she called from within. "Carlyle Foster." "Who?" "Carlyle Foster, I'm your new sensei. We have an appointment." "Oh, right, I..." Thisbe's words limped, half-muted, through the door. I called to cancel. We've had a security thing, problem, breach. I didn't get any message. Now isn't a good time. Carlyle's smile was gentle as a mother's whose child hides behind her knees on the first day of kindergarten. I knew your previous sensei very well. We're all saddened by their loss. Yes, very tragic. They...
Shh! Will you hold still?
Are you all right in there? Fine, fine. Perhaps the sensei could make out traces of other voices through the door now, soft but fierce. Or perhaps he heard nothing, but sensed the lie in her voice. Do you need help? He asked. No, no, come back later, I... More voices rose now, clearer, voices of men, soft as whispers, but urgent as screams.
Pointer, stay with me. Stay with me, breathe.
Too late, Major. He's dead. The door could not hope to stifle mourning. A small child sobs, piercing as a spear. Carlyle sprang to action, no longer a sensei, but a human being, ready to help another in distress. He pounded the door with hands unused to forming fists, and tried the lock which he knew would not succumb to his unpracticed strength. Those who deny providence may blame the dog within, which, in its frenzy, probably passed close enough to activate the door. I know what Carlyle saw as the door opened. Thisbe first, barefoot and in yesterday's clothes, scribbling madly on a scrap of paper on the haste-cleared tabletop, with the remnants of work and breakfast scattered on the floor. 11 men stood on that table. Battered men, strong, hard-boned and hard-faced, as if reared in a harder age, and each 5 centimeters tall. They wore tiny army uniforms of green or sand brown, not the elegance of old Europe, but the utility of the world wars, all grunge and daily wear. 3 of them were bleeding, paint bright red pooling on the tabletop, as appalling as a pet mouse's wound when each lost drop would be 0.5 liter to you. 1 was not merely bleeding. Have you never watched a death, reader? In slow cases like blood loss, it is not so much a moment as a stretch of ambiguity. One breath leaves, and you wait uncertain for the next. Was that the last? 1 more? 2 more? A final twitch? It takes so long for cheeks to slacken and the stink of relaxing bowels to escape the clothes that you can't be certain death is visited until the moment is well past. Not so here. Before Carlyle's eyes, the last breath left the soldier, and with it softness and color. The red of blood, the peach of skin, all faded to green as the tiny corpse reverted into a plastic toy soldier, complete with stand. Cowering beneath the table, our protagonist sobbed and screamed. Bridgers is not the name that brought you to me. Just as the most persuasive tongue could never convince the learned crowds of 1700 that the young wordsmith calling himself Voltaire would overshadow all the royal dynasties of Europe, so I shall never convince you, reader, that this boy, not the heads of state whom I shall introduce in time, but Bridger, the 13-year-old hugging his knees here beneath Thisbe's table, he made the future in which you now live. Ready. Thisbe rolled her drawing up into a tube and thrust it down for the boy to take. Might she have hesitated, I wonder, had she realized an intruder watched? Bridger, it's time. Bridger? Imagine another new voice here. At home in crisis, commanding without awe. A grandfather's voice. Stronger, a veteran's voice. Carlyle had never heard such a voice before, child of peace and plenty as he was. He had never heard it, nor have his parents, nor his parents' parents in these 3 centuries of peace. Get to work, son. The others still need you. Bridger reached from beneath the table and touched the paper with his child's fingers, too wide and short, like a clay man not yet perfected by his sculptor. In that instant, without sound or light or any puff of melodrama's smoke, the paper tube transformed to glass, the doodles to a label, and a purple scribble to the pigment of a liquid bubbling within. Thisbe popped the cork, which had been no more than cross-hatching moments before, and poured the potion over the tiny soldiers. As the fluid washed over the injured, their wounds peeled away like old paint, leaving the soldiers clean and healed. "Thou too, Mycroft Canner," you cry, indignant reader. "Thou too maintainest this fantasy, repeated by too many mouths already. As poor a guide as thou art, I had hoped thou wouldst at least present me facts, not lunacy." "How can your servant answer you, good master? I shall not convince you, though you have seen the miracle almost firsthand. I shall never convince you that Bridger's powers were real, nor shall I try. You demand the truth, and I have no truth to offer but what I believe. You have no obligation to believe with me, and can dismiss your flawed guide and Bridger with me at the journey's end. But while I am your guide, indulge me, pray, as you indulge a child who will not rest until you pretend you too believe in the monsters under the bed. Call it a madness. I am easy to call mad. Carlyle did not have the luxury of disbelief. He saw the transformation, as real as the page before you, impossible and undeniable. Imagine the priests of Pharaoh, when Moses' snake swallowed their own, a slave god defeating the beast-headed lords of death and resurrection, which had made Egypt the greatest empire in human memory. Those priests' expressions in the moment of their pantheon surrender might have been a match for Carlyle's. I wish I knew what he said. A word, a prayer, a groan. But those who were there, the Major, Thisbe, Bridger, none could tell me, since they drowned his answer with their own instant scream. Mycroft! I took the stairs in seconds, and the sensei in less time, pinning him to the floor with my fingers pinching the trachea so he could neither breathe nor speak. What happened? I panted. That's our new sensei, Thisbe answered fastest. We had an appointment, but Bridger, and then the door opened and they saw everything. Mycroft, the sensei, saw everything. Now she raised her hand to the tracker at her ear, which beeped with her brother Occam's call from upstairs. No, don't come down. She snapped in Spanish to the microphone. What? Everything's fine. No, I just spilled some nasty perfumes all over the rug. You don't want to come down here. No, nothing to do with that. I'm fine, really. While Thisbe spun her lies, I leaned low enough over my prisoner to taste his first breath as I eased up on his throat. I'm not going to hurt you. In a moment, your tracker will ask if you're all right. If you signal back that everything is fine, then I'll answer your questions. But if you call for help, then the child, the soldiers, and myself will be gone before anyone arrives, and you will never find us. Clear? Don't bother, Mycroft, Thisbe made for her closet. Just hold them down. I still have some of those memory-erasing pills. Remember the blue ones? No, I cried, feeling my prisoner shudder with the same objection. Thisbe, this is a sensei. She squinted at the scarf fraying about Carlyle's shoulders. We don't need a can of worms right now. Occam says there's a polylaw upstairs, a mason. Senseiers live for metaphysics, Thisbe. It's what they are. How would you feel if someone erased your memory of the most important thing that ever happened to you? Thisbe did not like my tone, and I would not have braved her anger for a lesser creature than a sensei.